from WBUR Boston. I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Last week, President Obama called for more investment, federal spending in education, infrastructure, and basic research to secure the economic future of the middle class, he said. Republicans have a different idea. Cut, they say. Cut deep and cut now to create a growth economy. Those two visions are about to clash dramatically again. This hour on Point, the clash ahead and the Republican plan for the middle class. You can join us on air or online. What do you say? Spend, invest, or cut deep and cut now? Who's really watching out for the U.S. economy, the middle class? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Here was just a bit of the president with his new message. He's out on the road with it. This was last week in Jacksonville, Florida.
If we don't make the necessary investments to ensure that America's a magnet for good jobs, investments in education, manufacturing, research, and transportation and information networks, we're just waving the white flag of surrender to other countries as they forge ahead in this global economy. You know, that kind of attitude is saying there's nothing we can do to help middle-class families compete and win and grow. And that's a bad bargain for the middle class.
Different message from the Republicans, different tone entirely. This was a little earlier in July. Speaker of the House, John Boehner, Republican, Ohio, talking with CBS's Bob Schieffer about how this Congress, 113th, should be judged.
We should not be judged on how many new laws we create. We ought to be judged on how many laws that we repeal. We've got more laws than the administration could ever enforce.
And just last week, Wednesday, House Majority Whip Kevin McCarthy, Republican congressman from California, spoke to Fox News about some of the GOP's budget priorities.
Our strategy is to eliminate the waste in government in many different ways, but actually produce a pro-growth economy. We actually get this economy growing again. And we have laid out a budget, and it's the only budget that will balance. It's the path to go forward. But the most important thing we do, you know, we're the only Congress since World War II that's been able to cut discretionary spending year over year over year. But what we really need to get to is the mandatory. That is the major portion of the budget. The president won't do anything on that.
We will hear in a moment from Congressman Tom Cole, Oklahoma Republican on the House Appropriations Committee. But joining me first from Arlington, Virginia, is Ginger Gibson, congressional reporter for Politico. Ginger Gibson, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So what's the divide that's opened up here? Is it the very same thing we saw in the fiscal cliff negotiations last year?
We are seeing members of Congress resume their positions from the fiscal cliff fight. Republicans who are pressing their leadership not to give up a debt ceiling increase or a continuing resolution to keep government open through October without getting something from Democrats. And Democrats are holding their position, saying they're not going to deal on the full faith and credit of the United States, and that while President Obama says he'd like to talk, he's not willing to talk on those grounds.
You've got different philosophies here, different strategies, and you've got a calendar. Lay that out for us. By when do they need some kind of permission for further spending, and when does the debt ceiling come into play again?
The continuing resolution is going to need to be passed by the end of September. It will run out in October. Without it, government closes. The debt ceiling, it's more of a moving target based on how long the government can keep paying its debts without having to raise that limit. Think about it as trying to budget with not quite knowing how much your meals are going to cost for the next month before you max out your credit card. It's a little bit more variable, but likely to be up in October. So these two deadlines are running up against each other. And there's a lot of different theories of how to move forward strategically, both within the parties and the two different parties. Republicans, not all on the same page. A number of them think that they should press hard, that this is their best way to get anything done. They call this must-pass legislation, and they say in order to get Democrats to do anything that they want, they must tie it to this must-pass legislation. But those in their party disagree, saying the risk of shutting down government is too big. They look back at Newt Gingrich. Remember the last time House Republicans pushed for a government shutdown, and it didn't work out so well for them. They see shutting down government as having the potential to do real damage to their party. Democrats are trying to hold firm, saying that they want to see what they want done, and that they're not willing to negotiate on some of these big issues. But the president today going to Chattanooga, Tennessee, talking about a grand bargain not likely to be well received from Republicans is only going to add another level of negotiations in the coming months.
Ginger, the push for cuts, specific cuts, is already well on in the Republican plan. Can you lay some of those out for us in the EPA, the Interior Department, and right on down? What's the scale of cuts that the GOP, and which of course controls the House, is pushing for?
If you remember, the Republican Party pushed really hard for a budget from the Senate after they didn't pass a budget resolution for the last 4 years. The Senate passed a budget, and then in response, the Republicans said, that's nice, but we're not going to negotiate with you on that budget. As a result, the House of Republicans, as well as Senate Democrats, are moving forward on appropriation bills. The big, 500, 600 page long spending bills that both chambers have to put together, there's still no sign that they could negotiate those. But that's the idea. And in those spending bills, Republicans are making big cuts. They're trying to undo some regulatory action in the EPA, programs that President Obama has proposed to try to roll back climate change, to put sanctions on power plants. By defunding some of those programs, they can change policy without having to do so. They've made cuts to the food stamps program, something that brought a lot of ire from Democrats. They, in fact, cut that out of the farm bill, that appropriations bill. They've increased spending on some defense programs, and they're still fighting about the sequester. You know, the sequester is one of those things that come and go. It was a big deal earlier this year that sort of tapered off when it wasn't the immediate pain that many had thought it was going to be, but they're disagreeing over keeping the sequester numbers in place. Democrats are pushing back at Republican efforts to cut some other programs that are entitlement programs, to cut some school programs by not increasing the funding from the sequester levels. So there's a number of programs that are in these appropriation bills that Republicans are working to cut back and to reduce as they go forward.
I mean, I'm looking at some here. This ARPA-E, that is the Advanced Research Projects on Energy. The committee bill would cut that to $50 million in 2014, 80% from current funding even after sequestration. EPA cuts 34%, if I've got that right. Interior Department, is it 19% they would cut, or they would cut it to 19% of what it's been, something like that?
They would cut 19%. So these are programs that they have not agreed with for some time now. There's been legislative efforts to undo some of these programs. The EPA is really sort of the ire of many a conservative. And in putting forward these spending bills, we're cutting that funding in some places rather drastically. A 19% cut is pretty sizable from year to year as a way to undo programs that they've been trying to get rid of.
I want to look at the underlying kind of philosophy here. A lot of people point back to Paul Ryan in March when he laid out this sort of laying out the fiscal 2014 budget and talking about his proposal to balance the federal budget in 10 years by cutting spending without any new taxes. Here's Ryan.
We cut wasteful spending. We repair the safety net so that we can help those in need. We protect and strengthen key priorities like Medicare, a program that's going bankrupt, that's jeopardizing the health security for millions of American seniors. And we foster a healthier economy so we can create jobs and grow more wages.
Ginger Gibson with Politico, is Paul Ryan's vision still driving the Republican call for cuts now?
It is. You know, we, in a normal sort of process, they talk about regular order. Paul Ryan's budget would have gone to conference with the Senate budget that was authored by Patty Murray. The two would have sat down, hammered out their differences, and come to some big numbers, some agreements on how much spending there should be in the upcoming years. Then they would have gone back with those numbers and drafted these spending bills. Because that didn't happen, because House Republicans have so far refused to go to conference with the Senate Democrats, there is no consensus. They're operating mostly off the numbers that Paul Ryan put together, but they're finding those numbers to be very difficult. And some of the bills, they're deviating from them.
Difficult the cuts, because the cuts are so large, I guess.
The cuts were just too much to handle. And it's also, we have to think sort of strategically for these guys. One thing to vote for a budget that looks at 10 years, that takes big numbers, that doesn't get into specific programs. It's another thing politically for them to stand up and vote for the actual cuts to line items, the reductions to programs like the EPA, like food stamps. And while Some members find it politically advantageous to vote for all of these cuts. Others find it a little more difficult to swallow when they start looking at the individual line items.
Yeah.
And as a result, that has caused some problems.
Ginger, your colleague David Rogers had a story a couple days ago. The headline was House Republican Budget Strategy Collapsing. He said, like an army that's outrun its supply line, the GOP budget strategy in Congress shows almost daily signs of coming apart. What's he pointing to? What's that about?
He's pointing to these attempts to write these appropriation bills and the inability to keep them inside those numbers. David Rogers, who's been covering the budget process for years now, is quite the expert, found that in a number of these appropriations bills, they're unable to keep below those post-sequester numbers and that they're adding more spending. Like I said, this budget is a big top-line number that Paul Ryan put together, Representative Ryan, and when they've gone to try to look at these numbers on an individual, you know, more micro level, they have a lot more difficulty.
We saw this report back in the spring that the U.S. government deficit was plunging on its own with better receipts coming in. Does that take some of the urgency away or not for the GOP?
It does change the conversation. The economy has improved better than expected. They're getting more tax revenue in. Part of the reason why there is a debt ceiling showdown scheduled for October instead of this spring like they had originally thought. And it helps the Democrats' negotiating position when they see they can say, look, we're shrinking the deficit. The deficit is getting smaller. What we're doing is helping. And it allows Republicans to sort of back away and try to expand, look at the more long term.
We'll see. Ginger, we're up against it here. So grateful to you for joining us. Ginger Gibson with Politico. Thanks, Ginger. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Talking this hour about the GOP economic plan. The president says he's got the way for the middle class. What do Republicans say? I'm going to go to Washington right now and an influential Republican congressman who's right at the heart of this. Representative Tom Cole joins us from Oklahoma's 4th Congressional District, South Central Oklahoma, member of the Committee on Appropriations and the Committee on the Budget, Deputy Majority Whip in the Congress. Tom Cole, thank you very much for being with us, Congressman.
Hey, Tom, it's great to be with you.
How do you see this fall shaping up with the president saying we've got to invest for the middle class to keep this country competitive and your party saying we've got to cut for a pro-growth economy? Where are we headed, Congressman?
Well, we're headed for a really important national debate, probably a pretty intense struggle, and I hope at the end of the day a productive compromise between the two parties. I think you've laid out the issues pretty well. I don't think you can have sustained growth, with uncontrolled deficits. Now, we've made some progress in that regard. The deficit's about half what it was when the Republican majority came in. I think we deserve a lot of credit for that. But it's still going to be over $650 billion, so a pretty staggering number. And something that we think ultimately discourages investments, leads to uncertainty in the markets. In addition to that, obviously, we think the president's health care proposal is stifling job creation. Again, a lot of confusion around it. A lot of businesses cutting back hours, trying to avoid the mandates. The president himself pushing off the mandates for businesses while leaving it on individuals. And we got people like Howard Dean writing that one of the central parts of that program, the Independent Payment Advisory Board, the cost control mechanism will fail. So we think that creates a lot of uncertainty. And finally, again, we think the president, has been in regulatory overreach in agency after agency. So we think those are the things that are responsible for what's been a pretty anemic recovery and one that both sides would agree is unsatisfactory.
Your latest budget, Congressman, the GOP's would cut discretionary spending still very steeply, pretty much across the board. But what about the deficit? I mean, it's fallen by close to half in recent years. It's projected to keep falling for the next few years. Ben Bernanke at the Fed says that now's not the time, with the economy still weak, to go for more big cuts. Why keep the pedal to the metal on cuts when we've seen the deficit coming down and you've got your Fed chair saying, well, be careful there?
Well, we would actually agree with that in some areas. We would like to redistribute where the cuts are coming from. Remember, where the cuts that are in the budget are really part of the Budget Control Act, part of the Sequester Act. That was a mechanism that the president advocated for, you know, signed into law, was all for, to help control spending. And
of course, most people didn't think it would ever happen, but there it is.
Well, again, it was his suggestion. I mean, just read the Bob Woodward version of that. So I don't think you can say, gosh, I never thought what I suggested would actually ever actually come to pass. Well, it has. Mm-hmm. And again, we think we agree with the president on some of these discretionary cuts. I would like to, you know, open up the rest of the budget. Most people that look at the federal budget would say the unsustainable part is Medicare, Medicaid, you know, food stamps, Social Security. Those areas are 60% of the budget, and they're growing very rapidly. And we ought to look at some common sense reform that protect the essence of the programs and yet still allow us to deal with the debt. The president, by the way, to his credit, has put some things on the table and caught a lot of Democratic flack for doing so. He talked about what's called chain CPI.
Yeah.
Wouldn't cut anything, but would slow down the growth
of Social Security.
About, $400 billion worth of cuts in Medicare. Again, we'd still spend more money, but we'd do so with some reforms, and probably, I would assume, at the expense of some of the large drug companies. And he's talked about means testing, similar to what we do on Medicare Part D for the whole program. So those are things that I think are promising. And, again, I would argue we need to go further, but I recognize that's a pretty significant step by the president toward the Republican position. We ought to look at some of those things, in my view, take the president up on that, and offer in exchange some of the discretionary spending that he thinks is important.
You sound like you may be in the minority on that, though. I mean, the president put those measures out there on Social Security, chain CPI, on Medicare cuts, and didn't exactly get an embrace from your party, Congressman.
I think he got some pretty kind words on that. Now, he also is asking for another tax increase. And remember, we had one at the beginning of the year. And at that point, by the way, if the president wanted more revenue, he could have had it, because all the Bush tax cuts ended. And he basically specified where he wanted to go in terms of both personal income tax, capital gains, dividends, all that sort of thing. And so he got, you know, a significant chunk of revenue. He's also getting a lot of tax increases right now that are associated with the Affordable Health Care Plan, so-called Obamacare. We think a third round of tax increases in a single year is a real job killer. And you're just not going to get Republicans to vote for that. Again, we'll redistribute where the cuts are that we've already agreed with the president need to happen. We agree that, again, these need to come from other areas. But you're not likely to get Republicans to vote for a tax increase. And to think otherwise, I think, is political fantasy.
Congressman Cole, the president says, you know, we've got to make some serious big investments in education, in research, in infrastructure, ports, and you name it, or we're not going to be competitive in the global economy, and the middle class will be hit. How do you make cuts at this scale, and they are very big cuts, and make the kind of investments he's talking about, or do you think those are not important?
No, I think they are important, and I actually agree with the president's basic point. I would prefer to redistribute the cuts. Really, we're not doing anything on the entitlement side of the budget. That's 60% of the federal budget. All these cuts are coming in areas that you know, or what most people think of as government. But we're continuing to shove ever more money in Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security with no reforms. And look, we've done this before. It's not as if Social Security has been sacrosanct. We've done everything from raise the age. You know, if you're my age, that happened in the 1930s. I wouldn't be able to retire fully on a and get a full Social Security
yep.
check at 65. So let's look at those kind of things. The food stamp reforms that were proposed in the Republican Farm Bill, frankly, were 2% of the program. They didn't affect anybody who was directly eligible for food stamps. They affected people that were gaming the system. Honestly, states that were gaming the system in some cases.
But with
so
respect,
there are common sense reforms we can make.
But you sound almost like a dissenter. I mean, the president said, as you say, he put out measures that would help rein in entitlement spending. And you say you're for key investments in research and so on. But as you know, the Republican budget that's out there cuts all kinds of research.
Well, it's because we simply can't get at the discretionary, non-discretionary side of the budget without the president and the Democrats being willing to do that. And if they're willing to do that, then I think there's a potential trade-off here. And if you know, but if the deal is, yes, we're willing to do that, but we also want to increase taxes, we're not going to increase taxes for the third time in a single year. You know, that's mm-hmm. just you know, I think not likely to occur. And I don't think you can find a single economist that would argue we should be increasing taxes right now. I mean, I again, we've done that twice. Mm. To do it a third time, I think, risks what's a very fragile recovery.
There's this standoff over the Affordable Care Act, Obamacare. The president talked a lot about the middle class, and, I mean, it's not hard to see the numbers. Medical expenses, number one cause of bankruptcy for the middle class. Obamacare takes that risk, that threat away from the middle class, but lots of your colleagues want to defund or, you know, sort of overturn Obamacare. How do you get the middle classes back on that front?
Well, first of all, we've actually passed seven pieces of legislation that the Democratic Senate and the President has agreed to that have cut $62 billion and lowered the regulation. There used to be an assisted living program that was financially unsustainable. Even Secretary Sebelius said that was a bad program. It's gone. The 1040s that were going to be required for every small business on every $600 purchase, gone. I think we could probably get rid of, I think my Democratic colleagues would agree, what in the world are we doing, which we are in the President's health care, but taxing medical devices, wheelchairs, oxygen tanks. We really going to fund health care by taxing people that are sick? So there's a lot of changes that can be made. Now, we think this program is overreaching. It's ill-conceived. And again, when I pick up the Wall Street Journal and I read Howard Dean saying the Independent Payment Advisory Board that's supposed to control the cost is going to fail, I think, and when I see the president himself say, you know, the mandates we had on business, that probably, we can't get that done. We're going to push that off. We're going to let business off, but by the way, we're going to still mandate individuals, which seems bizarre to me that you don't push them both off for a year if you're not ready. But so there's a lot of problems with this thing. I think, again, most economists that look at it would say, at the minimum, in the short term, it's certainly creating a lot of uncertainty among small business, which are the leading job creators in the country, is probably costing us jobs.
Tom Cole, he's on the Appropriations Committee, Committee on the Budget, congressman from Oklahoma. Congressman, there are a lot of people who would like to speak with you. May I bring a couple on here?
Sure.
Joplin, Missouri. Gene is calling. Gene, you're on with Representative Tom Cole.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing well. As a small business owner, my husband and I say, cut hard, cut deep. There is no reason in the world why our government will not run on a budget the same way that we have to. We can't go back to the bank time after time and say, oh, well, our business may not look any better, but give us more money anyway. We have to justify what we're doing and that we're doing it well. And we can't do that when we have new regulations and new taxes coming at us on a daily basis.
Gene, what about the president's big call? It says invest in the critical things, research and infrastructure we need to compete globally. How's that strike you, Gene?
I think we do need to invest in infrastructure and education. So why don't we take some of the money we're borrowing from China and giving away to other nations and put it to work on our own nation?
Well, I mean, it doesn't amount to so much these days, but foreign aid, but I take your point. Congressman, tell it like it is. Is there money that the United States is spending abroad that it could spend at home? I see pretty big cuts in foreign aid proposed in your Republican plan here.
Well, I think there's always a way to run any multi-billion-dollar program better. Now, foreign aid, the entire budget for the State Department, all foreign aid, that includes, by the way, aid to critical American allies like Israel, is about $50 billion. We're running a $650 billion deficit. So you're not going to get there on foreign aid. You've got to really get to where the real drivers of the debt is, and that's on the entitlement side. But the basic point that your caller makes, mm-hmm. I very much agree with. Look, I used to be in small business. Mm-hmm. I understand what regulations and costs do. And when you're the employer, you're the last person paid. You got to pay your vendors. You got to pay your people. You got to pay your taxes. You know, everybody else. And you're taking all the risk. It's a tough thing to do. And the reality is we've made it harder for small business people, not easier. And there again, they create about 60 or 70% of the new jobs in the country. I'm not surprised we're bumping along at this anemic job creation rate, and we've got a stubbornly high unemployment rate of 7.6 or 7%.
Let's get a call from New Orleans, Louisiana, and Jim, you're on with Congressman Cole.
Hi Tom, how you doing?
Hey Jim, how are you?
All right, I'm simply not going to even entertain what your people are saying. What I'd like to say is the lessons learned. 45 years ago, the Republican Party told the United States that they were going to save jobs if they took power. And they blamed the loss of jobs in the 70s on regulation, taxes, and everything democratic. As everybody who knows history knows, the Republicans did break the unions. They broke regulation. In the 70s, 80s, 90s, and 2000, we've had rampant fraud and trillions of dollars stolen from the economy. But most importantly, with all the tax reductions they've insisted upon, with all the destruction of the unions, with all the destruction of regulation, what they have, they haven't invested in the United States. They've invested overseas. And you can't tell me that we couldn't stop that. If we closed our markets to vendors that sold or manufactured overseas and did not manufacture at home, they would have to bring those jobs back. And I'm really tired of hearing that small business is the biggest employer in the United States. It can't be that way.
Jim, I think we've got it. My time is short with the congressman. Let me take it to him. Tom Cole, you hear the complaint there. Republicans have, with cutting regulation and going after unions, have hurt the country. Of course, Democrats were part of moving a lot of jobs abroad, too, but you hear the fundamental complaint there.
First of all, you know, I'd love to compare the 1970s with Ronald Reagan in the 1980s, and I'd love to talk about what a Republican Congress working, by the way, with Bill Clinton accomplished in the 1990s. I think those were actually pretty prosperous periods in American history. In terms of jobs going overseas, there is a global market out there, and there's no question there's competitive pressures that are tough. I always like to point out, in my district, the largest single-site employer is Michelin Tires. That's not an American company. You know, we've got a lot of foreign auto manufacturing companies investing in the United States. I've got an Hitachi plant that employs 500. And about one out of every seven American jobs now depends on exports, including, by the way, a lot of our agricultural economy. So the idea of closing our borders to trade and becoming economically isolationist, I think, is the way to condemn the American economy pretty quickly. Free trade has been a job creator. But again, you know, the rest of the world has begun to copy American, not just technology, but the American productive system. China, as a communist economy, wasn't much of a threat. Once it became essentially capitalist in terms of a lot of its market orientation, creativity of the Chinese people and their focus on economic development has made them much more competitive. That's not something the United States did. That's something, by the way, the Chinese did themselves. And other countries are doing suit. That's, you know, the living standards in those countries are moving up because they've adopted a lot of the techniques we have. Now, that doesn't mean we can't compete. We can. Again, we've got to be smart about it. I don't think higher taxes, more regulation, and government control of the economy are the way to go. That's not the way the economies that are actually prospering around the world are achieving their success.
And yet, I know we're over time, but just 1 second here. You've seen the middle class, you know, its income just not moving for a long time now, as our caller points out. What's the problem there? You've had a lot of Republicans in there during that time and a lot of cooperation in the Clinton years with Democrats. What's the problem?
Well, a lot of Democrats, too. Look, we are in a global economy, and we do, you know, we used to lead the world in education. We used to be the most educated people in the world. We're probably about eighth now, according to most statistics I read. You know, why? Again, not enough of our kids are staying in school, not enough are going on to college. A lot of those that are picking skills that, however admirable, and I say this as a doctorate in Victorian history, may not be marketable in the economy. So, you got to look at engineering degrees and petroleum geology degrees and that sort of thing. This is still an extraordinarily productive country. It's still a country that most of the world wants to come to, and a lot of it comes to and is successful. We can deal with the problems we have. I guess the fundamental choice is, do you think you deal with it by bigger government, higher taxes, and more regulations? Those are the things the president changes. Or do you think a leaner, smaller government, less regulatory, and counting on the competitive abilities of the private sector and the American people are the way to go? That's the vision I would put forward.
Congressman Tom Cole of Oklahoma on the Appropriations Committee, the Budget Committee. Come back and talk to us when things really get hot. Thank you for being with us today, Congressman.
I'd be honored to do it. Thank you, Tom.
I'm
Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the GOP economic plan. The president says he's got the way for the middle class. What do Republicans say? We just heard Representative Tom Cole there from the Appropriations Committee, Committee on the Budget, big Republican voice in the House of Representatives right now. Lots of response online here. Dave says on Twitter, the GOP's plan is like a starvation diet. It won't work because at some point you have to eat. But Kyle says, can we stop the red team, blue team, rah-rah, and try to figure out why government programs account for so much of the economy, a quarter of the economy, and have done nothing, Kyle writes, to eliminate poverty or promote development of the middle class over 40 years through Democrat and Republican administrations? We're going to hear in a moment from another Republican voice, but let me get a little Democratic response right here to Tom Cole's comments. Congresswoman Nita Lowey joins us right now from Washington, a Democratic congresswoman from New York's 17th congressional district, ranking Democrat on the Committee on Appropriations. Congressman Lowey, thank you very much for being with us.
Tom, it's a pleasure for me to be with you. And if sensible Republicans like Tom Cole could sit down with me or Democratic leadership, I'm confident we could strike a deal that replaces the damaging and arbitrary cuts from sequestration with a more balanced plan for deficit reduction.
You call Tom Cole sensible. What did you hear in his comments that you're not hearing in the main from the GOP now?
He's a friend of mine. And unfortunately, I think he's just following the party platform. We must replace sequestration with a balanced plan for deficit reduction. And the House majority is proceeding as though sequestration is the new norm. And I think it's important to note that there are only a dozen legislative days before the end of the fiscal year. The House has to get serious. They have to agree to a budget conference so we can determine overall spending levels and write realistic appropriations bills and avoid a government shutdown. Now, as I said, Tom is a friend, but what does he say to $1.5 billion cut to the National Institutes of Health Medical Research, degraded military readiness, canceling training rotations, grounded aviators, deferred equipment maintenance, furloughs of hundreds of thousands of federal employees, reducing paycheck, and it creates a drag on economic growth. In fact, the CBO says eliminating sequestration for 2013 and 2014 would create up to 1.6 million new jobs. So this has been a disaster. And as the appropriations bills are considered, if we don't get to conference with the Senate, which is following the president's request and the Balanced Budget Act request, this is really going to be damaging. You know, Tom, even the G20 has an expansionist program talking about investing in infrastructure. The deficit is coming down, and to see the impact of the Republican cuts will continue to be devastating, especially, as you mentioned before, to the middle class.
You mentioned the NIH and medical research there. You mentioned cuts in the military. Republicans would rather exempt the military, you know, do a deal so that the sequestration does not hit the military, but it hits everything else. What about that? Are you ready to deal on that?
Well, Tom, sure. The first bill for the military, for the defense bill, as you know, compared favorably for what the Senate is doing. But the problem is Tom Cole and the Republicans voted for the Budget Control Act. There's a firewall between defense and the domestic priorities. And comes January 15th, defense is going to be cut seriously by approximately $48 billion. I know I met with General Dempsey just about 10 days ago. He is really worried about our readiness. So I don't know what Tom Cole has to say about that. The Republicans put together a defense appropriations bill that's pretty good, but they're going to lose $48 billion unless we get rid of sequestration. And what we're seeing, the EPA that deals with clean water, drinking water grants, cut 83% and 61% respectively. Renewable energy efficiency, eliminating the COPS program, we'll have 1,400 fewer police officers on the street. Impact to health and education programs cut 22%. So I am very, very concerned that unless the Republicans get serious, unless we bring the appropriation bills to conference with the Senate, this can really happen. And well, they seem to be thinking this is the new norm.
What do you say to Tom Cole's argument that President Obama's had a fair amount of deficit spending, and yet we don't have a robust economy? So, you know, the argument there is, let's go another way. Let's cut. Let's get this pro-growth economy.
Look, I want to make it very clear. It was July 2011, December 2012. Speaker Boehner walked away from a deal with the White House. And what Tom Cole is talking about, a grand bargain, but Speaker Boehner, because of his Tea Party caucus that dominates, he couldn't make a deal. And the president's budget includes some of the adjustments to the mandatory spending. So the president and the Democrats are willing to sit down, but you don't see any cooperation. And I have to tell you, we're going through these interior bills and labor HHS that funds education and the National Institutes of Health is so bad that they wouldn't even bring it to the committee this week. I'm not quite sure what's going to happen there with it. So we have to get serious. We have to deal with the impact on the economy. We have to deal with the impact on research for cancer, for autism, for Alzheimer's, and the military, which usually means so much to the Republicans.
Congressman Nita Lowey, ranking Democrat on the House Appropriations Committee, please stand by right there. I want to get a conservative voice in here with you, if you'd be kind enough. Romina Boccia joins us right now from Washington. She's Federal Budgetary Affairs Fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Romina, thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, Tom.
You hear Congresswoman Lowey's complaint saying, look, we've got the deficit coming down and the Republican cuts are going to be damaging. They're going to be damaging on the research front, on the U.S. military front. The president's open to a conversation on entitlements, and he's made moves to show that. Time for the GOP to engage instead of draw this deep line in the sand. What do you say, Romina?
The deficit is coming down in the short term, but we still have a massive debt problem. The debt burden per household is at $140,000, and it's growing. And deficits, while they fell from their extreme trillion-dollar levels during the recession, they're still very high at $650 billion this year, and they are growing again. By the end of the decade, we will see trillion-dollar deficits again, even with the sequester in place. So the point that I think is really important for people to understand is that these high levels of deficit spending and government debt, they drag down growth significantly. There's academic research that confirms this over and over again by one-third, and growth is depressed for decades on average. And I think this is really what's holding back the middle class, is that we've tried stimulus spending from 2009 to 2011, hundreds of billions of dollars in infrastructure investments, education investments, and where did that money go? Where is the improvement? What has the middle class really gotten out of that other than a massive tab?
The EU went for austerity, Congresswoman Lowey points out, and that didn't work so well. They're coming around to more spending now. Is it time for us to go to austerity, Romina?
I'm actually from Germany, so I'm familiar with the situation in the EU. The way that the situation is discussed is it's as if Europe was one uniform country. But if you look at more closely, you find some countries raise spending, raise taxes, and their growth levels are much lower than the countries that were prudent, that cut taxes, embraced a pro-growth economy, and those countries are flourishing. If you look at Germany, they have a structural surplus despite having to bail out Greece and other nations, and they're the strongest economy. And what have they done? Welfare reform, labor market reforms.
Let me take it to Congresswoman Lowey. Congresswoman, cut taxes, cut spending, and boom, you'll get pro-growth.
Oh, my goodness. I think whoever was speaking should go talk to the G20. We saw what happened with the restrictionist policies. They're all talking about expansion. They're all talking about investing in infrastructure. They want to create jobs. And by cutting research, you're not going to do the job. I just was talking to some people who work at a major medical institution. Young people are not going into research. People are being fired. The research is at a standstill. Go tell it to people who are suffering from cancer or autism or Alzheimer's. You can give them that lecture, but it's not the reality of what's happening. I think if the Republicans are serious, they could get to conference with the Senate. We could have regular order. We could sit down and figure this out instead of just giving speeches and seeing the economy in distress. So I look forward working with Tom Cole and Hal Rogers, the head of the Appropriations Committee, and other sensible Republicans. Come to the White House. Let's make a deal. Let's talk about the whole bill.
Representative Lowy, we've got a lot of people who would like to talk with you. Can you take one call from Nashville?
Yes.
I know your time is short. Paul, in Nashville, Tennessee, you're on with Congresswoman Lowy.
Well, thank you. Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm calling about your previous segment, but this may pertain. I'm a small business owner, and they were talking about the uncertainty that Obamacare is causing small business owners.
Mm.
My point is we just want something concrete. We know what we had was not working. We don't know if what we will get will work, but what we want is something now and stop playing around and trying to change things constantly.
So are you happy to see the GOP looking to defund Obamacare or not, Paul?
No, I'm tired of them just playing with it. Let's go and try it. It may work, it may not, but what we had did not work.
Paul, we've got it. And I appreciate your call, Congressman Lowy. Paul's ready to roll with Obamacare, but you can hear his concern about uncertainty.
I'll answer that very quickly. Costs of health care are already going down. The insurance company understand that there's oversight. And there are many issues in which Tom Cole and I disagree, but he called this idea of defunding Obamacare the legislative equivalent of a temper tantrum, not helpful and politically damaging to Republicans. So I think that what is happening out there with Obamacare is constructive. We're seeing a lot of education going on. There are navigators going on in every district trying to help people. And comes October 1, I am cautiously optimistic we're going to see more and more people with insurance so you and I don't have to pay for people who are going to the emergency room.
Congressman Lowy, Nita Lowy of New York, ranking Democrat on the House Committee on Appropriations. We know you've got to go. We appreciate you being with
us. Thank you so much, Tom. Good to talk to you.
Great to have you. Romina, let's take a call here from Florida, West Palm Beach. Alex, you're on with Romina Boccia.
Hey, Tom. I'll make it brief. I know you're running out of time.
Mm.
You know, the programs that the House Republicans want to, you know, at least leave cut because of the sequester are ones that are shown to grow the economy, you know, education, scientific research.
It's more than leave cut, by the way. It's cut further to get, they say, to the pro-growth economy they want. But, okay.
It's funny to hear the congressman discuss the falling levels of education in the U.S., and then they want to cut education more, you know. And how are we not cutting subsidies to large, very profitable corporations, but, you know, still defunding schools?
So what's your question or your challenge to Romina?
My question is, you know, we have these programs in place that are shown to be pro-growth, and yet they're still being cut. Like, how are these things, you know, happening?
Yeah. Romina, how about it? Even where things work, I mean, we do hear Republicans, Tom Cole sometimes among them, on some of these cuts to research saying, I'm not sure this is such a great idea. Are the cuts being laid out in the right way, Romina, from the GOP side?
The right approach, of course, is to look at what are truly federal priorities, what are things that the private sector or states and localities are better suited to handle. So if you look at basic research, the government has an important role to play there. But a lot of research dollars have been diverted towards commercialization, towards companies like Solyndra and the like, who have shown to fail and who are in the business of what private sector is supposed to do, which is commercialize basic research. So more basic research funding and less for these commercial projects.
But of course, basic research is on the chopping block here, too. Let me ask you on this bigger, big front for the deficit of Social Security, Medicare. I mean, the Republicans last year insisted that the president go for chained CPI, which would cut down the rate of change for inflation for Social Security recipients. He did that. They wanted him to embrace, cuts in Medicare. He came out for means testing Medicare. Is there... Is there room here for some big bargain? He's come a couple steps in their direction. Are these the kind of cuts that would satisfy the GOP?
There certainly were a lot of promising proposals in the president's budget, but I read the whole budget, and the problem and why the budget didn't get any votes is that the president wanted $7 in tax increases for every $1 in spending cuts, and also the timing of the spending cuts wouldn't have occurred until 2017, when the president had already left office. So what he really wanted to do was ramp up spending right now during his term in office, and then another administration leave them to deal with the spending cuts, which we would have been able to see how well that would have worked. So there are some good proposals on the entitlement reform front, and I think that's where both parties can work together, and that's really where the structural problems lie, which is that mandatory spending is out of control, growing massively, and it is overwhelming the budget, and that is why it's squeezing out other federal priorities like national defense, like basic research. So if both parties can come together and find structural reforms to fix our spending and debt problem, then they can go through line by line and identify just what federal priorities need to be funded, and the money will be there to do that.
Doesn't look too promising right now in the rhetoric out there. Do you see a united front holding together on the GOP side to really stare down the president and the Democrats on this, or will they break and compromise?
I think we're seeing a lot of encouraging movement in Congress, and there are a lot of good reforms out there that we can work on together, like Social Security's change, CPI, like greater means testing in Medicare, but also in Social Security, and also simpler reforms like increasing the eligibility ages. There are a lot of proposals where I think the two parties can come together.
Romina Boccia, Federal Budgetary Affairs Fellow at the Heritage Foundation, conservative think tank there in Washington. Romina, thank you very much for being with us this hour.
Thank you.
Listeners, there's a taste of what you will hear a lot more about coming into the fall. You can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org, or listen right there. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Thanks for joining us today. Tomorrow we talk to fast food workers. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.